technology moves forward at such a crazy fast pace that most of the time we don't even have time to stop and think about what we're sacrificing in the name of progress. Our guest today wrote about three great features that companies killed and what we can learn from their loss. Welcome, Jason Heiner from Tech Republic.
Hey, Megan. Pleased to be here, as ever.
Thanks for coming on. So first, let's talk about the physical keyboard on the smartphone. When it was there until the iPhone, and then it disappeared. Why did they give it up? Why did Apple decide not to put a physical keyboard on the iPhone?
Yeah, so, you know, the iPhone was this, especially the first iPhone, was this amazing device that gave you the usability that really none of these devices before could do. That was the one problem it was trying to solve, was that these devices, BlackBerry and Windows Mobile primarily, were great for power users, but they were very, very difficult to learn how to use. You had to dig through menus and all of this. And the way that they figured out how to do this was to get rid of the keyboard, give you this big one piece of glass that had multi-touch gestures, right? Swipes, pinches, all of this kind of thing. And it was so easy. I remember the very first one, I really wasn't quite sure what to think about this thing. I was testing it for about the first week and I was taking some pictures on it and I would show, I had a 2-year-old at the time, and I watched her, I set the phone down and I watched her pick it up, swipe to unlock, tap the phone, the photos app, and then start swiping through pictures. And I went, whoa, like if my 2-year-old can figure out how to use this, then even the CEOs are going to be able to learn how to use it, right? So, because that was the biggest problem. Executives had all these phones and most of them had no idea how to make a phone call or barely even, you know, reply to an email. So, you know, the iPhone solved that. But in order to do that, it needed that. In order to do that sort of touch kind of thing that was big enough for your finger to act as the primary, you know, pointer and gesture mechanism, it needed more glass. It needed a bigger screen. And in doing that, it lost the thumb keyboard, which so many people that loved BlackBerry and that had, you know, become so proficient on them decried, right? And even to this day, I think people who used to use BlackBerries and Palm Pre's and, or sorry, the Palm Trios, you know, will tell you that they don't type as many emails or as long of emails as they do, you know, even back then. With the virtual keyboards have gotten a lot better. But it was a big sacrifice. But the trade-off, ideally, you know, or you know, ultimately, was worth it. It gave us a lot more than it took away with that ability to sort of write longer emails and write more emails.
Right. I mean, I haven't always used an iPhone, that was why for a long time I was like, I need a keyboard. I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of typing. I don't want the on-screen keyboard. It's what kept me away for a long time. And it's like so many those things with Apple, they're just like, you'll come around. And I did. So,
yeah.
So it's something that I don't know. I mean, it's something I don't miss. I didn't know that really people were sending fewer emails, but maybe, maybe that's because of the keyboard or because of something else. We're just writing less and we have more emojis maybe to communicate.
the emoji trade-off. Yeah. No, do you think it's true? Do you write as long emails as you used to when you had that physical keyboard, if you really think about it?
I always thought that was just time, but I guess it's, you know, who knows, it's probably both. Offline messages in Gmail was another one that we've lost. I mean, not offline in Gmail, but just the idea that email isn't something that you just use when you're connected to the web. I mean, that was something that existed in the past. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So in Gmail was this amazing thing that when it came out, it was like it was in beta for the longest time, right? And April 2004 it was launched. And the only way you could get in was through if you knew somebody that had an invite. So the most popular person in your whole network was always the person who had, you know, the Gmail invites if you needed one. But the reason was it did a number of things better. One, it was faster. You know, loading up email clients used to be so slow, whether it was Mozilla Thunderbird or Outlook Express or Microsoft Outlook. It used to take forever for these things to load, right? Spam was becoming a big problem at the time. And then also storage. Gmail gave you this 1 gig, what was then, back then, 1 gigabyte of storage, which was about, you know, roughly 500 times what most of the other webmail clients were offering. So you didn't have to worry about deleting messages all the time and your box getting full and not being able to accept more emails. Those were big deals. All of those things were a big deal. But the only way they could do it was by making this a web-based email program. And by doing that, it kind of always had to be connected. It did always have to be connected. Whereas things like, at the time, laptops were really taking off at the same time. And one of the things you could do if you're a business traveler, for example, and you had a laptop and, you know, you would open up your email when you still had a connection, it would download all of your messages. You would get on a plane, for example, or you'd go somewhere that didn't have connectivity and you could all open up your emails. You could type responses. You could even start new emails, even if you weren't connected. And then when you reconnected to the network, all those things got sent automatically, right? It just would automatically sync and send all those messages. Well, Gmail kind of killed that. And so all of a sudden, you're on a plane, you couldn't really, you know, you might be able to look at your emails if that page was still open in a web browser from when you closed it, but you couldn't send emails. You couldn't, start new messages and that kind of thing. You could open up a text pad or something and type them in there and then copy and paste when you got online again. But Gmail really was, Google was building Gmail for a world that was always connected, where there was going to be, you know, Wi-Fi on planes and Wi-Fi, you know, public Wi-Fi in public places, and really good public Wi-Fi everywhere. We're still not quite there, but we're a lot closer than we were 10 years ago, 11 years ago when Google started this. But that was a big trade-off, and it has been a big trade-off over the past decade for those who are using, you know, Gmail or Google apps in place of Microsoft Outlook and Exchange, for example.
Right. So in this case, it's like it's not them saying you'll come around. It's like saying, like, we know the future, and the future is you'll always be online, and you'll never, even on airplanes, you won't ever have to worry about not being online. This won't be an issue.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, but it was a, like I said, big trade-off, and that's what kind of this, the whole theme of this this article was, that, you know, making great products is about those trade-offs and being purposeful, and you can't do everything. And sometimes you have to get rid of things that you really like and are really important, and in some ways maybe part of the secret sauce of a product. But in order to move forward, sometimes you have to make tough choices, and that's what great products do.